Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your 2009 Capital Grant NOFA conference call. All lines have been placed on a listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for your questions and comments following the presentation. If you should require assistance throughout the conference, please press star zero. At this time, it's my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, Melanie Lilliston. Ma'am, the floor is yours.
Great, thank you, and I want to welcome everybody this afternoon to the conference call on the 2009 Capital Grant NOFA offered from the Department of Veterans Affairs. Today, I'm going to be going over the notice of funds available that was announced on January 23rd for the funds underneath the capital grant component of the VA's Homeless Providers Grant and Per Diem program. So I would encourage you, if you have not downloaded the NOFA, to take a look through that. And I, as he mentioned, when the operator mentioned when he came on the call, we are going to be answering questions. So I'm going to go over some of the very specifics of this NOFA, and then at the conclusion of this call, I will be answering questions. If for some reason we don't get to all of the questions today, you'll feel free to give me an email or a call, and we can get your questions answered. But today, I'm specifically going to be talking about the NOFA that was announced on January 23rd. As I mentioned, this is a capital grant. The deadline for this NOFA is March 25th, 2008. This is a firm deadline, and you have to have your application submitted to the Department of Veterans Affairs Grant Per Diem Program, which is located in Florida. The address is listed there in the NOFA by 4 p.m. So I would encourage you to make sure that your application is sent and you have confirmation that it was received by that date and time. Funds that are being offered under this NOFA are a help to organizations to offset the expenses of construction, rehab, and rehabilitation of a building for providing transitional housing to homeless veterans. There are several definitions here that you're going to want to take a look at. Once you read through the NOFA, a lot of the questions that you may have will be answered in the supplement appendices that you'll see when you download the whole entire application. Most of the definitions and those types of things are going to be in appendices E, and it will go through some of the regulations and all of the important things that are going to be required. So if you have a question about what the term homeless means or what some of the other things that are included in that, I would make sure that you're going to read through that. Funds are offered to all 50 states, including in any territories operated by the U.S. This includes Puerto Rico, Hawaii, all of the, and those will be determined and be referred to as states within the application. Tribal governments and faith-based community-based and local governments are also eligible to apply for these types of funding. The funds are for providing transitional housing for homeless veterans. Transitional housing is housing for veterans up to 24 months. Services cannot exceed 24 months. Once the 24 months is over, you should be working on a plan to move those veterans into a different program. As I mentioned, the deadline for this application is March 25th, 2008. There's approximately $15 million available for the capital grant component. The limitations here is for transitional housing projects. Service centers will not be considered. This means that you have to have housing plus services in one location. I got a question yesterday of if I had provide services on one floor and the housing is on the top floor, is that allowable? Yes, it is, because you're having housing plus services. So service centers refers to a drop-in facility where veterans would just come and receive services but not necessarily live there. So in this particular offering, service centers are not going to be funded. Vans that are connected to a new grant and grant per diem program are going to be funded underneath this. Each grant funding period, you're only allowed to submit one application per organization. So if you are going to apply for funding underneath this grant and you want to apply for capital plus a van that is allowable, you're going to want to submit the capital grant plus the van submission as well. So just keep that in mind that you are allowed to submit a capital and van in this round as well. When you submit your application, you're going to want to make sure that you submit one original and three copies, and a cover letter stating clearly what funding priority that you were going to be applying for underneath. I'm going to cover those in just a few minutes. But you must have that submitted to the VA grant and per diem office in Florida by 4 p.m. Eastern time to be considered. Now, as I mentioned, there are three funding priorities, and those funding priorities are: for the first funding priority is for women with the care of dependent children only, and they're looking to fund programs that have beds, 30 beds or less. That means that the VA will pay for construction, rehab, and renovation of a building for the housing of veterans with dependent children. In this case, they're being specifically for women. They are going to take them and fund approximately $2 million in this category, and they will use those funds based on the scoring criteria as you go through. Highest scoring will get first priority, and then they will use the rest of the funds until they have been used all up to $2 million for women and dependent children which have 30 beds or less. The second priority here is Indian tribal governments or nonprofits that will provide housing on Indian tribal property. This is a pretty standard priority. If you are applying underneath this, they are going to ask you to ensure that you can prove that you are going to be serving the tribal government community. There's approximately $1 million allowable in this award, and once again, they will fund the highest ranking to the lowest ranking as funds permit. The third priority is the rest of the groups that are applying for funding in all of the states that will provide services for all homeless veterans. So if you do not fall into either of these first two categories, then you would be saying that you're going to apply specifically for the third priority of funding. The rest of the funding of the $15 million, the $12 million, is in this category. If there is any funds available from the first and second priority, they will be put into this category, but they are saying that $12 million will be funded for just the general homeless veteran population here. The important thing that everyone should remember is the goal of the program. The goal of the program, overall grant per diem program, is to help homeless veterans, primarily those living in places not ordinarily meant for human habitation or emergency shelters, to achieve residential stability, increase their level and or income, and obtain greater self-determination. So all of the things that you're going to fill in within your application are going to make sure that they fulfill these three goals of your program. One important thing that you should take into consideration if this is your first time or even if you're looking to expand your program is that this round of funding is for new or expanding programs, meaning if you have and not received funding underneath the VA, you would in the past for anything, you would be considered a new program. If you have funding from the VA at any point in time and you want to expand your program, for instance, if you have a 10-bed program right now and you want to expand it to a 20-bed program, you would be applying for those 10 beds. You would not be able to receive any additional funding on that first group of beds that you had received in the past. It would be only for the expansion of those. There is a very great emphasis placed on accountability within the VA, and this is important because you must meet certain criteria when you submit your application. The first one, especially when you're dealing with the capital portion, is that you have to have the life safety code of the National Fire Protection Association, and you can get those from your local homeless veteran liaison, and the coordinators are listed in the back of the appendices E. There's a whole listing, and it goes by state. And if you want to get a copy of those, and I would highly suggest that you do get a copy of those to make sure that your project will be up to code. If you are conditionally selected, you will have to submit your site control and your financial contributions here. This is a good place to note that the VA will provide 65% of your total budget, which includes all of the construction if you have to acquire space, and if you also have to purchase the land and build on it, your budget would include all of those portions in there. The VA will provide 65% of the funding, The remainder 35% must be matched by non-federal dollars, meaning you have to have secure funds from another source that will pay for the 35%. This also relates to the van as well. So if you're applying for a van, the VA will pay for 65%. You have to match the 35%. And this is only for services. This is only for the construction, rehab, and renovation. If you're looking for and you would like to apply for the per diem once your program is up and running, which would be the operational cost to pay for those services, you will indicate that within your application when you submit it. And that will ensure the fact that you will receive those per diem, and that will be that rate will be given to you once your program has been approved. Things to remember within the population is that this project must be at least 75% veteran specific, meaning that if you have 100 beds, 75 of those must be veteran specific. The other 25 can be for any population. It could be for the general homeless population, or it could be for if you're serving families, then it could be for the spouses and dependent children of those. But 75% of them, of the beds, must be veteran specific. If you are conditionally selected, you will be asked to submit some additional paperwork that will confirm that you have those funds available for the match. And once those have been done, then you will be fully awarded. The scoring process is described in the Section E of the appendices. And as we go through, you'll see that you must score at least 600 points of the possible 1,200. So there's a total of 1,200 points that that are available underneath this. The need is where you're going to, where 150 of these points are available, is where you document the unmet needs of veterans in your area. You want to make sure you use data from the Census Bureau, HUD, the Challenge Report. All of these places will show that you understand the community needs and the number of veterans in your area. And you must address the unmet need in your local community. So if your challenge report shows that there is a huge unmet need of women veterans, but your program is targeting male veterans, then you're not targeting the group that is the most unmet in your area. You want to target those women veterans in your area. The next 150 points are for targeting to persons on streets and in shelters. You're going to have outreach into the community, and you're going to have, and you want to make sure that you're going to have multiple avenues for outreaching and filling these beds. Keep in mind that the word homeless refers to individuals who are inhabiting places normally not where where people normally live. So this does not include individuals who have who are sleeping on their mom's or dad's couch or their brother's or sister's or their friend's sofa. Those people are not considered veterans, so you're going to make sure that you're going to have a targeting approach within your application so that way you know where these veterans are going to be coming from and how you're going to fill these beds. The next 200 points are for the availability of the applicant to develop and operate the project, meaning why is your organization more qualified than any other group in your area to do this? You're going to set up your program design with three specific relevant goals and objectives, tying back to the overall goal that I mentioned before, and you're going to describe the past experience of your staff, job descriptions, and resumes of the current staff. If you're a new program, you're going to want to describe the job descriptions of those positions that you're looking to fill. A big one is the coordination with other programs, which is worth 200 points. You're going to want to make sure that you have coordinated with federal, state, local, and private entities. You're not going to want to duplicate services. So if there's a really good community college down the road and they provide really good employment training, you want to link up with them and not provide that in-house, but have it be offered down the street and not have that be an additional cost. Innovation is something that's always in question, and it's only worth 50 points. It must be uniquely innovative and replicable across the country, meaning that this program has been around for over 15 years, and there are a lot of programs that were considered unique at the very beginning. So if you are going to check that off in your application, be very sure that your program is innovative. And if you have questions, feel free to give me a call. But in most instances, projects are not going to be innovative just because of the longevity of the program. The quality of the project, this is worth 300 points, and this shows the fact that you have thought through and are very much into targeting, knowing the types of services and the quality of those services being offered to the veterans. This is the key portion of your application. It describes how you're going to serve them, how important and how you've picked these types of services and why that they are the best ones to serve these veterans. Leveraging is worth 50 points. If you're going to have to show and document resources from other public and private sources that have been committed at the time of application. If you're able to do this even only in the form of Foundation A will pay 35% matching if they receive funding from the VA, that is considered a match because they are confirming that they will allow that if you do receive funding. Let's see. Cost effectiveness is worth 100 points. Applicant must be considered cost effective. So you want to make sure that your program is not costing the VA. One way to look at this is if there's $15 million available under this NOFA and the VA is hoping to fund about 1,000 beds, you can divide that and see, is my program going to be a cost effective per bed here? And if so, then it is something that the VA would be considered for funding. So you're going to want to make sure that that you're not charging $1 million per individual within your program because obviously that's not going to be cost effective for the individual. Let's see. What's going to happen is when you submit your application to the VA, it's going to go through a threshold review. That means it's going to be checked and made sure that all of the forms are filled out, all of the necessary documents are signed, you have all of the parts of the application, and everything is that your application is complete. Once that happens, it's going to be read by 3 to 5 individuals and scored independently. We just went over the scoring portions, so they will score each portion of your application, and your application will get a total score. Based on that total score, it will be read, as I mentioned, 3 to 5 times. Those 3 to 5 point values will be added together, and that will be the total value of your application. Each application will be ranked on that and funded accordingly. So when I talked about earlier about how there was $12 million available in category or priority number 3, they will fund from the top of that highest points to the lowest until all of the funding has been spent. So that is how it will go. If your application is conditionally selected, meaning they deem you high, if you score high enough there, they will call and write you for more information, including the site control and the matching funds, as well as some other documentation. Typically, you have about 2 to 3 weeks to get that information in order, and then you will resubmit that to the VA office. Once they receive that, it's usually another 3 weeks or so before they notify you that you have been awarded. Just because you've been selected conditionally does not mean that you're automatically awarded. Usually about 6 to 8 weeks after the deadline, so 6 to 8 weeks after March 25th, they will notify recipients if they need to, if they are going to be conditionally selected. So that is how that goes through there. Key points are to remember are the deadline. Make sure you read through the application itself and that you have, if it's possible, to have that matching funds available. Remember that you must have the funds available when you get that if you are conditionally selected. The other things that are important are that this funds are for new or expanding projects. So if you have a project already up and going, this is not funds for you. And I would encourage you, if you have additional questions, I think we're going to go ahead and open it up to questions right now and see from there. So the operator is going to come back on and go through the process to ask questions, and we'll get through as many questions as we possibly can. I know I've gone through the information quickly, but I'd be glad to go into more detail if people have specific questions.
Thank you, ma'am. The floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question or comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. Questions will be taken in the order they were received. If you are using a speakerphone, we ask that while posing your question, you pick up your handset to provide favorable sound quality. If at any time your question has been answered, you can remove yourself from the queue by pressing pound. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question or a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. Please hold while we poll for questions. Your first question comes from Mr. Tom Hornung from Salvation Army. You may ask your question, sir.
Ms. Littleston, excuse me for asking this. I know it's a really dumb question, but
sure.
Twice in your presentation you said the deadline was March 25th, 08. I'm sure you may know 9.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You are correct.
I just wanted to make sure that that was the case.
You are correct. I'm sorry. Thank you for catching that. It is an 09 deadline. I apologize
Thank
for that.
You.
I
just
my dates are catching
sure.
up with me.
Well,
yes, it is March.
We'd be too late.
Yes. Yes, you caught me. It is 2009. You are correct. I apologize for that.
No need to apologize. Thank you.
Sure.
Your next question comes from Jean DeMaster from Human Solutions.
My question is about the cost effectiveness when they
mm-hmm.
look at the cost per bed. If we're providing services for homeless women with dependent children, we're going to build apartments, and they will have a higher cost per bed than if we were building SRO units. Is there a kind of range that you're looking at for apartment units?
You know, to be honest with you, those are kind of few and far between, but what I would, and it may vary geographically as well. Obviously, it's going to cost more to build in New York than it would be in rural Montana, those types of things. So what I would use as that would be to look at some of your local projects in your area, kind of the current rate, market rate, and see if your project falls in line with that.
So as long as we're in line with the comparables in our area, we don't have to hit the same level of cost per bed as if we were serving singles.
That's correct.
Okay.
Next question.
Now let me just add to that one more second. Keep in mind that the VA will pay for the construction, but when you're doing the operating costs, you're going to have something to offset that. So if you have a two-room facility that's going to serve veterans and their family, the cost for that would be just for the one bedroom, and then the second bedroom would have to be offset by another cost. And that rate would be covered by your per diem, but it would only cover services for the veteran itself, not for their dependents or the other people in that facility. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Your next question comes from Natalia Sardo from the Salvation Army.
Hi, I had a question regarding site control of the property. If an individual was either going to be renting the property or leasing the property, would that still be allowable?
It would have to be. Preferably, the VA would prefer to officially buy and acquire the property. However, they will do a long-term lease, 15 to 20 years, but you will have to have that written in writing that they will do that. But it will have to be for a long-term, at least 15 to 20 years.
Okay, and I do have one other question. I know
sure.
that it's been discussed, the veteran and non-veteran bed match, that the beds for non-veterans can exceed 25%. How does that factor into the capital expenses? For example, if we were building a facility with 100 beds, would the VA pay to construct, you know, to construct all 100 beds of the facility?
It will, but it will not pay to operate those beds.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Next question comes from Brian Ketchum. Sir, you may ask your question.
Okay. Along related lines, we're looking at a development that would have 20 apartments that would serve chronically mentally ill with permanent supportive housing, and then 15 apartments that would be transitional housing for veterans. So
mm-hmm.
when you say that you need that 75% of the units need to be serving VA, would it be fair to say that it's 75% of the transitional units that would
yes,
need to serve
VA,
veterans?
You make a good point. VA does not pay for permanent housing. So all of those permanent housing beds that you're looking at, VA would not fund those at all. Even construction-wise, they wouldn't pay for them. They would only pay for the transitional.
Mm-hmm. So we can just use the percentage. So say of 35 units, 15 of those will be transitional. So if we use that ratio in kind of portioning out costs that would be paid by the VA, exception.
That's correct. So if usually
so
square footage is how they do that. But if your total project is 40 beds or whatever it may be, but only 15 of those are transitional beds, those 15 beds, 75% would have to be veteran specific.
Okay.
Is that what you were
yeah.
asking me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And what we're looking at is all 15 would be. So it'd be 100%
right.
would be, of the transitional beds would be veteran specific.
Right. But they would just look at your transitional program and say, but one of the things you could say is once they finish transitional, if needed, they could move over to supportive housing. So that would be a benefit to the VA is that there would be integrated services within that program.
Yes. Okay. Great.
Okay.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Next question comes from Ari Marizan from Dignity Housing.
Yes, thank you. This is Ari Marizan, Dignity Housing. The question has to do with scattered sites as opposed to apartments, and can the total number of 30 beds be spread out between different scattered sites?
Scattered sites
actual homes, meaning homes.
Okay, scattered sites is allowable. The one thing that you're going to want to keep in mind, though, even if they're homes, they're going to have to meet the fire life safety codes, which
okay.
means they're going to have sprinklers in them.
Mm-hmm.
And most homes, it's going to cost a lot of money to have those put in. So it's something to think about. Scattered site is allowable, but you really need to think through the logistics of how you're going to monitor those and how things are going to be set up with it. But it is allowable.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from Jean DeMaster. Human Solutions.
Hi, this is just a follow-up question on the one previously about the cost effectiveness per unit. I didn't quite understand what you were saying in terms of if we have a mother who's a veteran and she has two children, so we have a two-bedroom unit. Did I understand you that you would not pay for the two-bedroom unit? You'd only pay for the part that the mother was in? Maybe I didn't understand
That
correctly.
To build it, the VA would pay for it. But to run it and operate it, then the VA would only pay for the veteran in that facility.
But in terms of the apartment, now we've got a two-bedroom apartment, wouldn't we just have a standard amount of rent?
Right, but I'm guessing that you're going to charge more for a two-bedroom than a one-bedroom.
That's right.
Then,
okay,
yes,
so
then you would have to have, if your one-bedroom is $500 and your two-bedroom is $1,000, the VA would only contribute, and this is how they figure out your per diem, so it's not necessarily they're going to contribute $500. That's how they're going to determine that the cost of housing that veteran is $500, and that goes to your per diem rate.
But if the per diem is $34 a day, and it's let's say there's 30 days in a month, so then you're working with $1,020.
But that's housing plus services.
Right, but would it matter if that had a $700 rent for a two-bedroom unit included in that $1,020, and the rest went for services?
The VA is going to determine what your per diem rate is, and that's based on the services you're offering, which housing would be one, and services that you're offering within your program. So I can't tell you if they're going to give you the maximum rate or not, but they're going to look at the fact that even though it's a two-bedroom, you can technically only charge for a one-bedroom.
Oh, okay. I understand. All right. Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, I mean, the thing to keep in mind here is that the maximum rate is around $34 a day, but that isn't guaranteed. It's based on the types of services that you're offering within your program. So if the VA looks at you're offering, 10 services, you have these additional funds coming in, they'll look at the offset and determine what's appropriate for them to pay for each veteran per day. So you won't know that until the program has been approved and you're getting ready to, right before you have an inspection, they'll determine what your per diem is, and they'll go through that with you. There's a whole worksheet that they do to fill that out. But it's based
yep.
on services and then the other types of income that you may have coming in and then your cost for each of those types of things.
You have a follow-up question from Ari Marizan.
Yes. This is regards to new or expanded projects. Could you
mm-hmm.
distinguish the two in an acceptable light that the VA would how they
new would be New would be VA hasn't funded your project before.
Okay.
You've never been received funding from them before. And expanding would be you get funding for 10 beds right now and you want to expand to 20, they will pay for those additional 10 beds only in the construction, but not for the first 10.
They'll pay for the second 10?
Yes, or whatever, how many
oh,
you're
the 20,
at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, but not. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We have another question from Jean DeMaster from Human Solutions.
Another question. In terms
sure.
of the non-federal match on the units, can low-income housing tax credits be used as non-federal match?
Okay. Technically, yes. However, I've only seen it used in a couple instances where it's successful. The thing about low-income tax credits are that they usually are for permanent housing, and since this is transitional housing, a lot of projects won't use them for that exact reason. So if you can secure them knowing that it's only for 24 months of housing, then yes. However, I've only seen it happen in it one, maybe twice times, because VA does not pay for permanent housing, and typically low-income tax credits aren't used for transitional housing. So that match isn't that great. It can be done, but usually because there's some loophole at the local level that allows them to do that.
In the example that somebody gave before, they were talking about having the veteran move into another unit or stay in their unit and somebody else moves into a new unit that they could stay in permanently. In that case, would it qualify? In other words, the veteran stays in unit 301 for the 24 months, then that veteran stays in number 301, and number 302 becomes available for the next veteran.
You would have to make sure, well, there's a couple things. That person wouldn't be enrolled in your program anymore. But you
That's
would
right.
always, let's say you have 30 beds total within the program, and 15 of them are permanent and 15 are transitional. You would have to keep those numbers set the whole entire time. So if you have 15 beds and you wanted to transition somebody, so to speak, to permanent housing, you would have to make sure that there was still a transitional bed available.
Available, right.
And that's typically the problem, is that you'll transition somebody to permanent housing, but they're there for a lengthy time, and you can't free up other space to open it up for another transitional bed or either for a permanent bed. So if you can successfully figure out how to do that, yes, but you have to make sure on both ends, especially on the taxing credit, that they know that that's what you're looking to do and that it's going to be kind of a flip-flop of those two.
Okay. All right. Can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
Okay. In terms of the services that we're providing, I know we're providing case management services and a lot of local services, but can we assume that the services the person would ordinarily get from the Veterans Administration, they will still receive, like health care? And that we don't have to provide those?
Right, but you're going to say that you're going to provide access to those services.
Right,
so if they
right.
need a ride, or if they need to make sure that if their case manager needs to make sure they're going to go over there for their appointment or whatever, you're providing access and management of that care. So you may not be providing the service per se, but you're going to be help managing it, which is a service in and of itself.
Okay. All right.
Does
great,
that make
thanks.
Sense?
Yep, it does.
Okay. You just want to make sure that you're getting credit for all of the things that your case management and your staff are doing, and that you're not going to be cut short when it comes to what your per diem payments are.
We have another question from Mr. Brian Ketchum.
Yeah, you mentioned regarding the per diem program
mm-hmm.
That the VA determines the amount up to $33, $34 per bed per
mm-hmm.
night. How do you
correct.
Recommend setting your rent levels if you're not sure how much money you'll be getting in per diem? Meaning, you know.
Okay, well, here's the thing with rent, and you have to keep this in mind. Rent is a function of income in this case. The only way that you can charge rent is when it's optional, and the only way that you can do it is if you provide the maximum that you can do is it's based on income, and you can only charge up to 30% of their income.
Right.
So a lot of programs that are very successful, what they do is if they're successful at getting additional funding is that they will charge the veteran rent, but they will put that rent into a deposit for them. So that allows them when they leave the program, they have a deposit for their, apartment and how and furniture and those types of things. So you can set rent, but know that you're not going to, you know, if the veteran only receives $100 a month, you can only charge him $30 a month.
Yeah.
It's 30% of their income.
But then are you assured that the per diem amount is going to cover the rent operating, just the operating expenses for that unit? So say it costs you
$400. No, they don't assure that that's going to be the
–
they don't assure that that's
– you know, it just in terms of operating expenses for a unit a month, it costs you $400. So you, in order to break even, you need $400. Your veteran can only pay 30%. How do you make up the other 370 if you're not sure that per diem will cover it?
Most organizations get other private funding to do that for them, and that's how they get additional funding to do it.
On an operating basis?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And in most instances, the $34 does not cover all of the services and housing that's being offered. So they use additional funds from other sources, not from the VA, to do that. And the most successful programs, not everybody gets $34 a day. And they won't guarantee that you're going to get $34 a day, but they, you know, they will ensure that you will receive something. What that may be, I can't tell you. But if you're unsure, then it's the suggestion is to see if you can find additional funds within the community that could offset those costs.
If you're able to find additional funds in the form of services being provided and being paid for, not charged to the development, versus what would be operating O&M funds, does that count, you know, so that perhaps a larger percentage of the per diem would go to cover your operating costs versus your services costs?
Well, you're just going to get a lump sum, and that lump sum is going to cover both your operating and your services. How you distribute that is up to you, but that's what's going to happen. That $34 covers both of those. So if you decide to go for funds that will cover one versus the other, VA isn't going to necessarily care that you have matching in that regard. If it's easier for you to get funding from a foundation for operating costs versus services, then that's fine. They're going to look at them, VA looks at them as a combination.
Okay, great, thanks.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have any questions or comments, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time.
For those of you who have questions or need more clarification on how the per diem is done, if you look in that appendices within that, it walks through the per diem portion and the approval of that process and how that's done in the form section in the appendices E. It goes through the regulations and it's let me look and see, it's subsection 61.31 in that. It talks about the application for the per diem and then just a general definition of that. So if you have more specific questions, it goes into a little bit of detail, not a whole bunch, but that may answer some of your questions and how that is derived based on the services that is being offered within your program.
You have another question from Mr. Tom Hornung from the Salvation Army.
Sorry to bother you again, but I have one more
question.
Do you know when the NOFA will come out for the per diem?
Usually what happens, and I can always go unusual because, I don't work for the VA, but, what they tell us is that they do capital grants and then they fund those projects that they build, and if there is any additional funds that remain at that time, then they will do per diem only.
Okay.
So that would mean September, October, if that happens, and I can't tell you one way or the other. But I can't imagine that it would happen before the summer.
Thank you.
Before the end of the summer, even. September, October would be the earliest, I would imagine.
Thank you.
Doesn't mean it can't happen, but usually they like to see how many people apply for per diem to see what their budget is. They don't like to build buildings and not be able to help offset the cost of running those without knowing, and provide more additional services there.
I understand. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
There appears to be no more questions in the queue at this time.
Okay. I'll just run through a couple additional things, and then if there aren't any more questions, if you think and after you look through and go through the NOFA, if you do have additional questions, you can feel free to give me an email. My email is nchv5@nchv.org. I would be glad to answer any. I know sometimes when you go home and think, oh, I should have asked this, or you wake up in the middle of the night and have specific questions, I'd be glad to do that. As you fill out your application, if you have additional questions, please let me know also. I can help walk you through that, or if you need specific clarification on a question or what exactly does this mean, I can also do that as well. Just keep in mind that the deadline for this is March 25th, 2009. Thank you for the clarification. And that it must be there by that specific date. You must have a complete application, and everything must be there when you submit it in. Just kind of as a closing note, one of the best things that I learned when I was in graduate school was that the easiest way to know that your application is complete and makes sense is give it to somebody that's never read it, but that's not familiar with your organization and maybe has never read a grant before. They should be able to read through your application and know from when that veteran walks into your door to when they leave, the amount, the types of services, what exactly they're going to be getting, and the quantity and quality of those types of services. If they can successfully do that, then you're good, because even though the individuals that are reading and scoring your grants are in the community and know veteran services, they all have a varying degree of what they know. So keep in mind that don't assume anything. Give as much information as you can and provide clarity when possible. So those are just kind of some parting words there. I would encourage you to check out our website. We are going to be having some trainings in the next couple of weeks if you would like to attend those as well. And if anybody has additional questions either now or in the future, I'd be glad to address those as well. Once again, my email is nchv5@nchv.org. Did we have any more questions or...
Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have any questions or comments, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. There's no clip. You have one more question.
Okay.
I have a question from Victor Radisi, Community Service.
Hello. Hello, I've got just a couple things to clarify, Melanie.
Sure.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
I missed the very first part of the call. What the website that you're referring to in the specifics on the appendices, where would we need to go to get that, if you don't mind repeating that?
Sure. You can go, I believe they're listed on our website as well, but if you go to the VA.gov's website and then go under Homeless Veterans, it's listed right there. It gives you the application by each section, A, B, C, D, E, and you can download those. I think it's Section E, Section 2, Part 2. I forget exactly, but it's it is in Section E that has that for you. And it's listed there on the VA's website, va.gov. And when you download, each A, B, C, each letter separately, and it's Section E that will give you the regulations as well as the contacts for the homeless coordinators, and you can use those to figure out who your liaison is and get those life safety codes regulations.
And one last question. On your
sure.
email address, is 5 the number or is it spelled out?
It is the number 5.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to take another question?
If there is one, that's fine. If not, I'll go ahead and wrap up, but I'm glad to stay on if there are more questions.
You have a question from Yvonne McJeters, Hope Heart Hands.
Yes, my question is, when you're doing your building, is it required that you have 3 contractors bids, or can you go with the contractor you already selected?
You must show, there are different regulations with that, including contractors and inspections. You must show that it's a reasonable bid and those types of things, but if you can show that you feel that that is the most reasonable bid, then that is fine. You don't have to have multiple, but they always suggest that you should. but you aren't required with to have multiple bids and or multiple inspections. But the suggestion is, or you know, is that you do have more than one just to cover your bases.
Thank you.
And that's true with appraisals as well, as if you're getting an appraisal on land or a building, is that you have one that's close to the date of the project, so that way it's the most accurate number as well.
You have another question?
Okay.
You have a follow-up question from Yvonne McJeters. Hello,
yes.
Ma'am?
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, another question I wanted to ask is also, will this be recorded and sent to us in email?
Yes, it will be sent to the people that were on this call. It won't be posted on our website, but it will. If you received confirmation email with the call and information, then yes, it will be sent to you. If for some reason you did not get that, you can send me an email, and I'll make sure you get added to the list.
Thank you.
There appears to be no more questions in the queue at this time.
Okay. I want to thank everybody for their time, and I wish everyone luck. If you do have additional questions, feel free to give me an email. I will be on travel for the next couple of days, but I will respond via email as quickly as I can. But I wish everyone the best of luck, and please let us know if there's anything else that we can do to help you. But thank you, and have a good rest of your day.